Good morning, everyone. Back again, and as promised, we have on the phone right now Senator Dan Sullivan. He's the junior senator for the state of Alaska. Him, Senator Murkowski, and Don Young make up the Alaska delegation serving us in Washington and up for re-election here in 2020 after serving for 6 years in the Senate. Senator Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Austin, great to be on the program, and thank you. I know right now, you know, for us, getting the word out on everything that's happening, all the questions that people are asking, you know, Senator Murkowski, Congressman Young, and I are doing town halls and, you know, events like this on the radio and media as much as humanly possible. So I really appreciate the service that you're providing and the opportunity to provide an update.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not easy right now because obviously this is, I'm in my mid-30s now, so I remember what 9/11 was like. I remember life before 9/11, life post 9/11. It seemed like it changed so much, but with the COVID-19 pandemic, it seems like we're going to see changes, and we're experiencing changes that will far outshadow even September 11th. So I know it's hard in light of that to get a re-election campaign going at the same time, but I wanted to open up the opportunity for you to share just your message going into this election season and what you want people to know.
Well, look, to be perfectly honest, in terms of a re-election, we've pretty much suspended all of that. When this hit, my team and I have been essentially working around the clock, 24/7 for Alaskans, just because, as you mentioned, Austin, this is such a critical time. We're battling this pandemic on multiple fronts. Of course, there's the health front, and we got to take care of our fellow Alaskans, really fellow Americans, but there's the economic front and the jobs front too, and you got to be battling them both. We're trying to do that, and one of the things in terms of a message that I want to get out, there's so much going on with this CARES Act. You may have seen, I was actually presiding over the Senate yesterday when we passed the additional relief for the CARES Act. I can go into a lot of detail on both bills. The implementation is always something this big, going to be rocky, going to be, you know, some snafus, no doubt. People are supposed to be getting individual checks right now, small business loans, but what I wanted to do more than focus on anything relating to the re-election is give out my office number in Anchorage, because if any listener is having a problem with a check, with understanding of how these new programs work, we want to hear from you, because as I mentioned, I have a great team, great staff, definitely the best fishing staff in the Congress in terms of knowledge on the importance of fisheries, but we want to help. So let me just give out my my Anchorage office number where we do a lot of our casework. It's 907-271-5915. And to me, battling this on the health front, the economic front, the jobs front, they're all related, and that's why I'm really glad that you're giving me the opportunity to say a few words about what we're doing in D.C. and how we're trying to bring massive resources to our state, which I think at this juncture is so important. You know, there's some people who saw the first CARES Act said, hey, that's a bailout for, you know, a small business or a bailout for, you know, the fisheries. I was able to get a $300 million emergency relief program in the first CARES Act for American fisheries, for Alaska's fisheries. But, you know, there's a lot in there, and I can go into it, but the idea that somehow this is a bailout, I think, is just incorrect. What's happening right now is, you mentioned 9/11, this is more like, you know, a war or a natural disaster where, through no fault of anybody in America, you know, whether you're a small businessman or a fisherman or, you know, somebody involved in the airlines, we get hit with this huge pandemic from overseas, and now my view is we got to help Alaskans, Americans, get through this very difficult time and then hopefully work on a strong economic recovery. So if there's issues that any one of your listeners is having, please reach out again, 907 271-5915. My team is working round the clock 7 days a week to help us get through these challenging times.
We'll put that number out on the web as well. When we put this online, we archive all of the interviews and other segments that we do. So that will be up on the web here as soon as we get this up for people who have questions.
You know, right.
As you said, it's an economic issue as well. Poverty and loss of jobs, all these things show an issue with people's health and well-being. But we also have the issues regarding a second wave. You know, a lot, it seems like America's kind of got COVID-19 not in a box, but there's a downward trajectory going on right now where it seems like we have peaked and the worst is behind us. Naturally, we want to talk about people getting back to work because we need to keep the economy rolling as well. But, you know, it's hard because the CDC came out yesterday with a warning that a second wave could be even more disastrous. Before we go into the CARES Act, which I'll give you all the time you need to talk about the CARES Act because that's an important conversation for fishermen, what do you think about reopening the economy and how should we go forward doing that in a way that can balance the health of people and the ability for people to work and bring in income, which also is directly tied to the health of people?
Well, look, it's the key question, and it's a really important question. And it's, again, a combination of health and economic issues and jobs. You know, I'm a big 10th Amendment believer. As a matter of fact, in my Senate office where I am right now, I have the Bill of Rights painted on my wall. And so I'm literally looking up at the 10th Amendment. The reason I mention that is that early on, you know, the president had said, well, I'm going to make the decision on the reopening of the economy. I think the federal government's role is to provide guidance, which, as you mentioned, the CDC is very important, and resources. And again, I can talk about the CARES Act that, you know, really, really brings massive resources to our state. But the call on opening the economy, I think, from a constitutional perspective, but also in a way that just makes sense, has to be more with the states, with the governors, with the elected leaders in cities and municipalities and boroughs. And the reason, Austin, is obviously we're a very big country. Heck, we're a very big state. And different parts of our state are going to be able to recover more quickly, where you can contain the pandemic while still start to open the economy. But it's got to be driven by data. And the other thing that I think is going to be helpful with regard to what we're doing on the federal government side, yesterday, as I mentioned, we passed the CARES Act 2.0 to really replenish a lot of these very big resources that we're getting out to the states. Some of the appropriated resources, for example, for the Paycheck Protection Program had already run out. So we made good progress on doing this yesterday. But one element of the bill we passed yesterday is really going to be a massive focus on testing. $25 billion. You know, in the first CARES Act, I was part of a group of senators that really wanted to focus on what we call a Manhattan Project. You know, for our younger listeners, that might not ring a bell, but Austin, I'm sure you know the idea of a Manhattan Project is really to focus the federal government's attention with massive brain power, massive resources, like we did in World War II during the Manhattan Project on the race to get the atomic bomb. So we are doing a Manhattan Project on vaccines and antivirals, which is going to be, of course, critical. That was in the first CARES Act, $11 billion with the National Institutes of Health, the military, private sector to come up with these life-saving measures that are going to help us get through this. And in this bill we passed yesterday, testing, a huge focus on getting as many accurate tests out to as many communities, and we're talking millions, if not tens of millions of tests that we need to get all over the country, that we need to get to Alaska, that we need to get to our fishing communities. And that is going to be one of the key things also to help us open the economy. The sooner the better on the testing. But again, an important development yesterday, $25 billion focused on a national testing push that's going to help us really, you know, open up our beloved state and country again. So those are how I'm thinking about the economic issues, but the governors of the different states, including our governor, who we are working super closely with. I probably talk to the governor and his team at least a couple times a day. Similarly with the president and their team, big part of our job is coordinating these efforts, getting the resources here. You know, I'm a colonel in the Marines. What we say in the Marine Corps is one team, one fight. And that's what we're trying to do at the state and federal level to battle this pandemic.
Well, that's good to hear about the testing. I know that that was an area where there was concern in the beginning, and now it's becoming more and more online. Our public health administrator, the head of public health here in Alaska, Dr. Ann Zink, has been widely praised with her handling, as well as Dunleavy as well, with following the recommendations of Dr. Zink. She's called for 3 million tests, I believe, or somewhere around 3 million tests for the state of Alaska. Do you think there's the possibility that we could have that many rapid testing here in Alaska because of this supplemental bill?
Well, look, that's certainly the goal, because we're talking in our discussions, and again, I was on a call with the president just a couple days ago. Several of the senators who were on the call raised the issue of just a massive push for testing, and we're talking in the hundreds of millions. That would be the ultimate goal. And again, there's different kind of tests. I was happy to see that Sandpoint has one of the Abbott labs. You know, that was something that I actually personally worked on, in, again, in coordination with our tribal health organizations in our state early on as this was hitting. And again, we've been pulling every lever possible, federal resources, but I just, through circumstance, happen to know the chairman and former CEO of Abbott Labs. He really was the guy who built the company, and sent him a text early morning a couple weeks ago saying, hey, I know everybody in the world is pressing you guys, but you can't forget Alaska. You can't forget our tribal health organizations. You can't forget our remote communities. And I got a text back from him in like 5 minutes saying, Senator, we will not forget Alaska. And, you know, Austin, early on in this crisis, our state had a lot more of these Abbott lab tests than much, much bigger states. So, but to Ann Zink, and I agree, she and the governor are doing a strong, strong job keeping people informed, making good decisions. But I agree with her. We're talking millions. And we also are hopefully going to see some innovations. These Abbott lab tests take about 10 to 15 minutes. But, you know, they're already talking about antibody tests that can be very quick. They're talking about getting the FDA to hopefully approve saliva tests, you know, pinprick tests with your blood to check on antibodies. These are all things that are being worked round the clock. The best minds in the world, which are our scientists, American scientists, are working it. And so having something like that in terms of a breakthrough to be able to test super quickly, even more quickly than these Abbott labs, is another area that's going to be critical. And then it's going to take a while longer because of the protocols and the safety that goes into it. But as I mentioned, in the first CARES Act, I was part of a group, a bipartisan number of senators who pushed for this idea of a Manhattan Project on vaccines. We'll get there, hopefully sooner rather than later. But these are all the different kind of levers that we're pulling in areas of focus that I want our fellow Alaskans to be aware of. And hopefully it's going to give them hope, because a lot of people are sacrificing, a lot of people are hurting all over Alaska, all over America. You know, when you think about it, a free society that we are, people are sacrificing for the common good to help the collective health of their fellow Alaskans and Americans. And everybody's playing a role, but we also got to make sure as we flatten the curve on the COVID health issue, we don't flatten the economy permanently. So we got to get that back and the jobs that come with it.
Yeah, and so moving transition into what you were talking about with fisheries, well, the hard part for Sandpoint and every other fishing-based community right now, particularly salmon-based communities, is that when the rest of the world, the rest of America, is seeing a downward trend and perhaps a loosening of health mandates, Sandpoint and the Aleutians East Borough is probably going to see the most likelihood for the chance of a COVID-19 entering into the communities in this next month. So when we're all tired of self-isolating, when the rest of the world is talking about loosening things, we actually have to be probably on our most vigilant and most alert in this next month or two. And that's kind of a hard and depressing thought to a certain extent. But what do you see for fisheries going ahead for safety? But also, I'll let you go ahead and talk about the CARES Act and how fishermen, because I know that my family, they're fishermen, they've been looking at the CARES Act, and they were not sure if there was anything that they could do to get into it. So what do you see for the fisheries, and what does the CARES Act provide for the fisheries?
Well, look, number one, make sure your family's calling my office, because anytime there's big legislation like this, A, it can be confusing. You know, we wanted to get this out the door fast. We were working around the clock. It took us, honestly, about, believe it or not, about 8 days to put this entire bill together, the first CARES Act. And there's a lot in there on fisheries, and I made sure there was. But it can be confusing. And to be honest, federal agencies implementing the law can also make mistakes. We're seeing that. So please have your family or any fishermen in the community, if they're confused, reach out to us. Let me talk to a little bit about what is in the CARES Act, because again, as it was being written, I was very focused on making sure our fisheries, our fishermen, our small businesses, by the way, our fishermen are the ultimate small businesses in America, because they take risks, they work hard, they produce a great product. Oftentimes it's a family-related business. So what we did in the CARES Act, a number of things. First, we worked hard to make sure there was a disaster relief fund. With the exception of the airlines, the only other industry, and maybe our ag sector, the only other industry highlighted in the entire CARES Act for direct appropriations right now is our fishing community, $300 million, which in my view was not enough. I tried to get much more. But the key thing, Austin, is we got a relief program for fishermen that's already in, already funded. The officials at NOAA and NIMS right now are creating a formula that we've been weighing in on. But this will be a good start for just direct assistance to our fishermen, and we'll try to replenish that fund if and when it gets depleted. So $300 million off the bat in CARES to direct assistance for fishermen. I'm anticipating the state of Alaska should, in my view, get a very, very significant majority of that, because of all of our listeners. You know, we are what I like to call the superpower of seafood, over 60% of all seafood harvested in America comes from our waters, Alaska's waters. Secondly, we made sure that the Paycheck Protection Program, that's the small business program, covered fishermen, covered those in the fishing community. Now, there's been, I will acknowledge, there's been some screw-ups with the SBA, the Small Business Administration, on how they're actually implementing this. I called the director of the SBA at 10 p.m. at her office. To her credit, she was in her office Saturday night, and said, look, we have to fix the screw-ups that you guys have put forward with regard to the regulations. To not get in too much detail, what they were requiring is that every deckhand, every crew member of any commercial fishing vessel was viewed as an independent contractor, where they had to go apply individually for their own PPP loan. That just doesn't make sense. It was very bureaucratic. We're trying to fix that. We'll give your listeners an update when SBA has fixed that. But the administrator committed to me that she would fix that. Third, you know, and this is a little bit more of a kind of a bummer to say, but we are anticipating, You know, obviously because of this giant pandemic, significant increases in unemployment insurance. So the federal government came in with a massive increase to each state's unemployment insurance program. Again, we made sure fishermen were included in that uninsurance program. Oftentimes at the state level, they are not. They are now. And again, so our fishermen can take advantage of some very plussed up unemployment insurance opportunities through the state office, State of Alaska Unemployment Insurance. But the plussed up resources and the coverage of fishermen is through the CARES Act and the federal program. The other thing we've been doing is we've been working with NIMS and NOAA on not having unnecessary regulations that could impact the health of our fishing community and people out on the water. So, for example, we got NIMS to get rid of, for now, temporarily, the requirement for having observers on smaller fishing vessels. And if you're not seeing that, let us know, because we worked hard to make sure that happened. And then finally, this is going to take a little bit longer, but it really goes to your question of how important our fishing communities are, but how vulnerable they could be. The President and the Secretary of Agriculture just a few days ago said that they were going to focus on our, essentially our food sector of the U.S. economy, people who harvest food, who process food and get it out to Americans. Now, when they made this White House announcement, it was focused on the agriculture sector. But I was in a call with the President just 2 days ago, and his chief of staff and the Secretary of Treasury, and I said, Mr. President, with due respect, there's another sector of the U.S. economy that harvests food, that processes food, that distributes billions of pounds of great food to Americans, and it's not just the farmers. It's the farmers of the sea. It's my constituents. It's Alaskan fishermen, and they need to be part of any broad program that the farmers are going to benefit from, including when the farmers are called essential workers. That means they're going to get priority for testing, priority for specialized equipment, and I said to the President and his team, it's imperative that our fishermen get that as well. So we are working on that, and these are all the areas where we are trying to get resources to our fishing communities and our fishermen, but also beat the drum and make sure that everybody from the President on down doesn't forget how important we are with regard to supplying Americans with a great product, great food, and during these challenging times.
Well, I appreciate all that information out there about what fishermen can do with the CARES Act and what is written in the bill. And a lot of these things, I'm sure what we've seen in the news is that the CARES Act, even though it was a $2.2 billion bill, a lot of it has already ran out of money. And just yesterday, the Senate passed a bill to replenish a lot of those funds to the tune of about $500 billion. Does that need to go through the House before it can be signed and enacted by the President?
Correct. So actually, like I said, I had the opportunity to preside over the Senate when we passed it yesterday by unanimous consent, and it goes to the House. They're supposedly going to vote on it tomorrow, and I would imagine the President signs it, assuming the House votes in favor of it, that the President signs it tomorrow evening or sometime on Friday. But it is a very significant increase to this Paycheck Protection Program. And again, the key to that one, Austin, is that that's loans for small businesses who are going through a lot of economic distress. But the idea throughout the entire CARES Act, if employers keep the connection with their employees, in other words, they don't lay them off even though it's very difficult times, that a lot of the loans that a small business are taking out from their local community banks, if they're using it primarily to keep their employees on payroll, then that loan will morph into a grant. Essentially, the federal government will forgive you of the loan during an 8-week period that hopefully is the height of us getting through this challenging time, and morph it into a grant as long as you are using it to keep your workers on payroll. You know, that ran out about we knew it was going to run out about 12 days ago. Unfortunately, there was a little bit of politics. Speaker Pelosi delayed. We had about a week where there was no funding. That was unfortunate. In my view, this should be above politics. My goodness, helping small businesses and their workers. But she finally figured it out, and hopefully she and the House are going to vote for it tomorrow, and we'll get these funds moving again to Alaskan small businesses. We had almost, and this is kind of unbelievable, we had almost $1 billion in loans go out to Alaskan small businesses under this Paycheck Protection Program in less than 9 days, which is pretty remarkable. The Secretary of the Treasury estimates that 30 million Americans were kept on the payroll of their small businesses that they're employed by. 30 million in that 9-day period because of this Paycheck Protection Program. So it's a really important program, very bipartisan, and we worked hard to replenish it yesterday in the Senate.
Well, that's good that you're able to get that money in. It's kind of terrifying, though, when you say that. Again, it's attached to this idea of 9 days, and we have what can only be estimated as months and months and months ahead of this crisis. So hopefully we're able to continue on. I know the idea is to get that U-shape or a V-shaped economy, and hopefully keeping people on the payroll, I'm guessing, is the hope that you can keep that a V-shape where you hit that bottom of the economy and then bounce right back up, and as opposed to a U-shape where it's more of a sloped upward curve where it's flattened for a little while and comes up as the economy comes back online. And I take it that is the goal here of the CARES Act.
Yeah, you are exactly right. So, you know, the good news, and we don't know, nobody really knows, is this going to be, like you say, U-shaped recovery, a V-shaped recovery? Two points on that, and you've touched on both. You know, going into this pandemic, the national economy was really strong. Lowest unemployment rate at 3.5% in 50 years. All the different sectors were looking strong. If you remember the jobs report in February, just in February nationally, was 250,000 additional jobs gained. And then the Alaska economy, Austin, you know, we had been in an extended recession. But in February, and as you can imagine, I track these numbers very closely. Yes, we had certain challenges, I think, in your region on our fisheries industry, but overall that was looking strong. The renaissance on the North Slope, we had the biggest exploration season in 25 years. Production is increasing, investment is going through the roof on the North Slope, and then we were looking at literally the biggest tourism season ever for the state of Alaska. That was just 2 months ago. So the hope is, because everything, the fundamentals of the economy nationally and in our state were very strong prior to the pandemic, that the recovery can be more V-shaped. Now, you're right about the CARES Act. One of the overlying areas of focus on the CARES Act is to make sure, as I mentioned, that employers stay connected to their employees as much as possible. Why is that important? It goes directly to what you just said. If we start coming out of this really pandemic-induced recession quickly, one of the best ways is to make sure that small businesses and other employers in Alaska and America already have their employees on the payroll, ready to go back to work. One of the reasons the recession in 2008 and 2009 at the national level lasted so long is because that connection between employer and employee had been severed. People had gone, you know, to unemployment insurance. They weren't part of the companies anymore. The small businesses lost well-trained employees. So we're trying to keep that connection. That's a theme of the CARES Act. And as you mentioned, we're hopeful that that will help drive a more V-shaped economic recovery than before. You know, I think some of the unemployment numbers in Alaska were at their all-time lows ever, in just in February. But we got to get back, and everybody working together, we'll get there. Stronger, more resilient.
Well, see what it, you know, the road is ahead of us. I want to again repeat to everyone that for fishermen, there's been so much information addressed here, but there is a lot in the CARES Act available for fishermen. Senator Sullivan's phone number for his Anchorage office, which deals with much of this information, will be on the website. Please go to apradio.org, and you will be able to find out that information so you can call and find out what may be available for your fishing operation here today. Senator Sullivan, I wanted to ask a follow-up question because you were tying this link between agriculture and fishermen, and this is a link that is no surprise to us here, that fishermen and the farming community are very well connected based upon the ideas of just fundamentals, harvest of food, production of food, and processing of food. And one way that we were before the pandemic trying to utilize that was to get onto a USDA bill that would provide broadband internet through a fiber optic connection in the Aleutians. That was based on the idea of us being tied to agriculture. GCI was going to the feds looking for a grant. And obviously that's probably mothballed at the very best right now. But do you know anything about this project and whether or not there can be a link made with the executive branch on getting broadband out here? Because, you know, radio has been huge during this time. It's been something that people have fallen back on time and time again, but there really is no replacement for the internet, especially as the world progresses with its bandwidth and we stay stationary. It's important for us to get that link to the world. Do you see the potential for a USDA grant to still go through for us to get a fiber link?
Yeah, let me address a number of points that you just raised, Austin. So, you know, one of the things, and I mentioned it just in this call with the president here a couple days ago, but making sure as federal officials talk about the ag sector, they remember that a very close cousin, you know, I sometimes use the word farmers of the sea, is our great fishermen. And, you know, I literally said this to the president, you know, Mr. President, I have tens of thousands of my fellow Alaskans that are in this community, really important. One area where we did make good progress on that, you might have recalled the president did this phase one China deal, where that's the big trade deal, where China committed to purchase a number of U.S. products. The ag sector, agriculture sector, was a big highlight of that. But I work closely, literally, president, vice president, and their U.S. trade rep to make sure that when they were negotiating with the Chinese that they would commit to purchasing a lot of American seafood, Alaskan seafood. That was part of the final deal. Literally, the numbers aren't public, but they're in the billions that China has committed. The president at the announcement, again, this is just a couple months ago, of this trade deal, highlighted ag, but importantly, he said the word seafood and our fisheries in the Oval Office. That was actually, or in the East Room of the White House. That was important for him to signal, yep, I'm watching China on their commitments on bringing in Alaskan and other American seafood. And I literally, Austin, 10 minutes before this call, was on the phone with the China's ambassador to the United States and was pressing him on making sure China kept their commitment on purchasing Alaskan seafood. That was, you know, 30 minutes ago. And he said he would take that message to Beijing. He literally just said that to me. So that's a good sign. You know, we're gonna have a rough road with China here, and I told him that on a whole number of things. But if they continue to keep their commitments on the trade deal, that can help smooth things over. But on infrastructure, I think there's a huge opportunity. The USDA grant, you know, one of the things that I had been working on was the whole issue of broadband out in the Aleutian Island chain with GCI. You know, a couple visits I've had to our friends in Unalaska. This is a huge issue, and there had been progress on this. I think there's going to be actually really good opportunities on infrastructure, and here's why. You know, the CARES Act is, we talk about it as phase three. It's really the third major piece of legislation that we have passed just in the last month to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. But a number of us are already talking about phase four. If phase three is kind of like what you and I have been talking about, Austin, is kind of a tourniquet and a cushion to get us through this challenging time, phase four should be something that turbocharges our economy nationally and in Alaska, something that, as you mentioned, provides more of a boost to get a V-shaped recovery. And the key element of that is infrastructure. So I sit on the Environment and Public Works Committee. We've already passed out the five-year highway bill. That Alaska does great in that. We have a great formula in there, probably better than any other state, what we get as a state versus what we pay in to the feds. We're talking about including in that infrastructure bill a ports and harbors bill, again, which for the Aleutian Islands, the Aleutian Island chain would be important, and to your question, broadband infrastructure for remote communities. I've talked to the president about this a number of times. You may have seen in press conferences he frequently talks about phase four and infrastructure. Talk to my Democrat and Republican Senate friends. Matter of fact, I had a good conference call with a really good friend of mine, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. He's a liberal Democrat from Rhode Island. He and I actually are good friends. We work together. Some of you might know he and I are the two guys in the Senate focusing on cleaning up our oceans. My bill, the Save Our Seas Act, which passed last Congress, the president signed, all about cleaning up oceans, ocean plastic, ocean debris. Senator Whitehouse was my main co-sponsor, and he and I have a bill called the Save Our Seas Act 2.0. It's called, already the Congressional Research Service said we could call that the most comprehensive ocean cleanup legislation ever. That already passed the Senate unanimously. We're trying to get the House to move it. So infrastructure, cleaning up our oceans, we think could be a really important part of phase four, the turbocharging of our national and state economy in terms of getting out of this pandemic. So, yes, to your question, can't promise it, but I'm going to be very focused on it and have been pushing this idea to everybody who will listen, including the President of the United States, who I think is very supportive.
That's great news. We're used to waiting for it out here, so no timeline is ever accepted out here for broadband internet, but just the hope that one day, we too might actually have streaming capacity. So I appreciate your continued effort on that, knowing that it is a real issue out here for us. One other issue out here, and you know about this one, it was a big drop, and you and Senator Murkowski, and I think Don Young came in on it, Congressman Young came in on it as well, dropped a Alaska delegate press release right before it happened and right the day that it happened. Raven declares bankruptcy. We have no commercial flight service to the Aleutians Eastboro right now, Sam Point. We have an awesome runway, been getting great service for years and years and years. Today we have no commercial flight service. You and Senator Murkowski came out with a statement that said that you were concerned about Raven's bankruptcy, and to have the senators of the U.S. Alaska delegation come out and speak about that, I thought was very interesting because it shows how critical this really is. Are you guys doing anything to find solutions? I know that a lot of other airlines have picked up some slack. That hasn't really happened out here yet. If it does happen, like Alaska Airlines talking about bringing out a 737 to Cold Bay and us going into a hub there, but that would require TSA and Cold Bay for that kind of thing. It's not an ideal situation for Unalaska. Are you guys looking to address this? I mean, I know that out of the last recession, we used the term too big to fail. Is Raven too big to fail, or do you think that there's going to be new carriers that come in? What are your thoughts about this big shakeup?
Well, look, it's a huge issue, and it is another casualty of the pandemic. You know, when these airlines are seeing their bookings drop by 90% plus, it's difficult for the small regional ones, and it's difficult even for the bigger ones, you know, Alaska Airlines and others. So, again, a big part of the CARES Act was to put forward a significant funding to address the challenges in our aviation community. Again, this is one of these issues. The Secretary of the Treasury, the top people that are focused on our airlines in terms of the aid are very aware of the challenges that we have in Alaska. And we are still pressing to make sure that our smaller airlines, not just Alaska Airlines, but our smaller remote airlines, the regional ones, that they get some kind of lifeline from the federal government. Raven, of course, is a complicated situation because they've already gone into bankruptcy, but even after they went into bankruptcy, I wrote the Secretary of the Treasury saying, you know, this could be 1,000 people laid off. And again, the CARES Act is focused on keeping people connected to their companies so they can continue to be paid. So we're still pushing. The Treasury has not come out yet with regard to where the different aid that is in the CARES Act. As I mentioned, the airlines have a specific focus in the CARES Act. So we're still pushing that, but I've also been in touch with the governor, his team. You know, we have a statewide aviation task force. I've been in touch with the senior leadership at Alaska Airlines and several of the airlines throughout our state to bring people together to make sure that communities, whether it's Sandpoint or other communities out in the Aleutian Island chain or throughout the state, have the ability for air service. And right now, as you mentioned, Austin, it's a challenge. You know, it's not an upside, but the fact that the demand is very, very low in a lot of our communities for air service does give us the chance to reorganize and make sure communities are being served. But to answer your question, yes, we, the state, the other industry players, the U.S. Treasury, are very focused on it, and we're going to continue to be focused on it. I've been pressing them to get these grants and loans out to our aviation community as soon as possible because, you know, we can't take additional bankruptcies that are going to impact our state, particularly our rural communities that are very vulnerable to the lack of air service.
Well, time will tell. Again, for so many things with this situation, with the pandemic, it's really just a matter of what's in the future. Time will tell and kind of waiting to see where it happens because it's not just the Aleutians Eastborough. It's everywhere across the world. Never have we seen, I think, something impact every corner of the world as powerfully as a COVID-19 pandemic. So it's truly remarkable. Senator, I know that you've given us so much time already. It's been a pleasure getting an opportunity to speak with you on these matters and just the areas that fishermen, the Aleutians Eastborough, are being impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic in our region. I know your time's valuable, though. There's so many things we could touch on, you know, military-wise or other areas where you have a natural resource, oil going through the floor, literally, negative value. But your time's valuable. Is there anything you'd like to say going out to the people here in the Aleutians Eastborough?
Well, Austin, I know. I don't know if you said you may have had a question on Iran. I think it's always important to focus on our national security. I will say, you know, our state plays such an important role with regard to our national security, and we got to continue to keep an eye on that. I chair the readiness subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee. You know, I'm still a colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps, still serving in the reserves. But I will tell you this. We're going to get through this pandemic. We'll continue to have challenging situations in terms of global national security, but Alaska is going to play an increasingly important role, whether it's, you know, Navy bases out in the Aleutian Islands. I took the Secretary of the Navy out to ADAC. There's talk in the Navy to reopen, warm that really incredible Navy base up again, perhaps put some, sub hunters and other, the Marines did a major amphibious invasion out there recently, great training. And then just on a bit of good news, we're a big state, but hopefully people heard this. Yesterday, the Interior, particularly our communities in Fairbanks and North Pole, celebrated the realization of something that it was just remarkable. You might remember about 15 years ago, the Air Force was looking around and saying, we're going to close bases like Eielson Air Force Base in the interior of Alaska. You know, when the military does that, it doesn't take long when you look back. When I've been out on ADAC and I see that strategic location, the deep port there, I kind of feel sick to my stomach that, you know, the Navy closed that base. Just makes no sense. But Fairbanks and North Pole and the interior, the delegation, fought against the closure of Eielson Air Force Base and then started to make the case that was made many years ago by General Billy Mitchell, the father of the U.S. Air Force, who in a Senate Armed Services hearing in the 1930s called Alaska the most strategic place in the world. Whoever owns Alaska can control the world, he said. Well, thank God we own Alaska. And yesterday was the beginning. Throughout the pandemic, the Air Force said, we're going to try and stay on time with a really important development for Alaska and the nation. You might have heard that Eielson Air Force Base now is going to be the home of two squadrons of F-35s. That's 54 F-35s and the thousands of airmen who and their families who will man and maintain these F-35s. The Air Force had told me we will start the beginning of these F-35s being stationed in Alaska in April of 2020. Well, guess what happened yesterday? Two of the 54 flew to Eielson. Big celebration. We had to do a lot of it, you know, teleconference-wise. But the F-35s started arriving at Eielson Air Force Base yesterday on time in the middle of this pandemic with the F-22s based at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. There's 2.5 squadrons there. There'll be two squadrons of F-35s. Those are considered what they call fifth-generation fighters. That means they're supersonic and they're stealth. With these F-35s coming out, Alaska is going to have over 100 fifth-generation fighters based in our state. There's no place on the planet Earth that has that kind of firepower. And you better believe some of our adversaries and potential adversaries, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, they took notice. As I said in an interview yesterday, in terms of national security in the Arctic and the Asia Pacific, the price of poker just went up for our adversaries. They are seeing these F-35s coming to Alaska, and they're going to be a little bit more nervous. And I think that's good for our state, but it's really good for the national security of our country. And it was a good news story, and I think our state and country needed a good news story. I gave a speech on this on the Senate floor last night. But we're going to continue to build up our military, our Coast Guard, and our state's going to benefit from that. We're the most patriotic state in the country, more veterans per capita than any state in America. Our Native Alaskan communities, Alaska Natives serve at higher rates in the military than any other ethnic group in the country, so we're a super patriotic state, and yesterday was a really important milestone with the beginning of an additional 54 F-35s being stationed in the great state of Alaska. It was a very important development that we in the delegation worked hard on, but more importantly, the people of Interior Alaska have been working on this for years, and it finally happened. So, good news story I wanted our fellow Alaskans to hear about.
I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia for pretty much my entire upbringing, so the news was not lost on me when I saw the F-35s, and I grew up around the Naval Base Norfolk and also the Air Force Base out there in Virginia Beach. So the brought back to my memories the sound of freedom and all that you always hear.
Sound of freedom, that's what I said yesterday, watching these come in. You know, screaming, I said, that's the sound of freedom. We love that sound in Alaska, and we're going to hear a lot more of it with 100 fifth-generation fighters all based in our state.
There it is. I know the sound well. So, Senator Sullivan, I appreciate it. Any last words before you head out? I know that we gave that once, and you said the great story there about the F-35s, but anything else you'd like to say, sir?
Well, look, I just want to thank everybody. You know, everybody's got a role to play, young, old, to get us through this pandemic. You know, let's always watch out for our elders, you know, our seniors. They're in many ways the most vulnerable to this. We got to take care of them. But if we're all pulling together, all sacrificing, which we are, watching out for one another, we're going to battle this on the health front. We're going to battle this on the economic front, battle this on the jobs front. We will get through it stronger and more resilient, but it's going to take some time. And I just want to thank all of our fellow Alaskans for the incredible work that people are doing to get us through these unprecedented times. There's been a lot of really inspiring examples of selfless actions and taking care of one another that make me very proud to be Alaska's senator and proud to be an American.
We appreciate your time, Senator. Thank you so much for coming on for as long as you did. That really was a great, informative experience. So thank you so much, and have a great day out there doing your work, and be safe.
You too, Austin. Keep up the great work. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That was Senator Dan Sullivan. He's the junior senator for the state.